If you're heading to Agriscot on the 19th of November, join us for a live episode recording with SAYFC. Starting at 9 a.m. in Seminar Room 2, I'll be joined by Katrina Gemmel and Jack Young to record an episode on what young farmers has meant for their well-being, how Katrina filled that void when it was time to move on, and maybe a few tales from those legendary young farmers' dances. Pop along to be part of the blether. That's Agriscot, 9 a.m, Seminar Room 2. Now, on with the show. Welcome to Blether Together from Farmstrong Scotland. I'm Sarah Stephen. This time, we're with a real powerhouse of Scottish agriculture.
So my name's Caroline Miller. I live on our family farm in Angus, where I run a tourism business, and I'm also the sector lead for Scottish agritourism.
Coming up, Caroline shares the warning signs that made her realise she needed to prioritise well-being.
My husband Ross, his dad and my dad both died when they're 64. He's about to turn 50, I'm 51. If I died the same age as my dad, I'd have like 13 more summers, 13 more Christmases.
We hear about the careful thought she puts into making life better and healthier, both for herself and her team.
3:15 on a Wednesday, we all down tools. No matter what the weather is, we're in the garden and we do a workout together for an hour.
And how learning to worry less can be the most important and the hardest lesson to learn.
Wish I could switch off that worrying, the worrying element or the overanalyzing element a wee bit.
Caroline, good morning. A woman with many strings to her bow.
Yes, quite a few.
I was going to get you to list them. Can you list them?
We obviously have the farming business here. There's our tourism business, the Hydeby Experience, which we've run for the past 20 years. Scottish Agritourism is our not-for-profit membership organisation, which I helped to found 5 years ago. And I'm also the sector lead, so I help with the national strategy for making sure that agritourism's growth strategy is delivered by 2030. I think that's it. Oh, I've also got a consultancy business I forgot to mention.
That's the one you're supposed to be plugging here, Caroline.
Yes, my looking after myself and trying to do less and delegate more is something that goes across all those different enterprises.
Well, we'll come back to the plate spinning and the juggling in a bit. But I typically start these conversations with a round of rapid fire questions. Are you happy to partake?
Okay. Yes, I am.
Question number one. What is the first thing you do in the morning?
I walk the dogs.
What is the favourite thing about your job?
The people that I get to spend time with.
What is one thing you would like to do in the next year?
Go on holiday multiple times.
What's the worst decision you've ever made?
I've made a lot. I don't think I could pick one. We have a written down list in our office of cock-ups we will not make again. And that's what we tried just not to repeat them.
I love that. Cock-ups we will not make again. That's going to go up on our wall as well. That's fantastic. One subject you would like to learn more about?
I would like to do some more formal training as a mentor.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for being a good sport and answering those questions. I do put people on the spot somewhat. I'm just being reminded by our producer that you forgot one very important role when you were listing them at the beginning. Mum.
No, I know. I was talking about things I might get paid for. That is my most important role.
Well, let's go back to that sort of plate spinning, you know, stress levels. Where are you on the sort of stress barometer today?
I feel quite good today. Yesterday was our PT session in the garden and all the team were out and we were having quite a good laugh. And I felt like we'd done some good stretching. I felt like I wasn't going to bed with a sore neck last night. So,
is there one thing that you do every day to make yourself? I mean, it could be physically, mentally, emotionally. Do you have habits, good habits?
I would say I used to have good habits and then I kind of went off into bad habits, I would say, particularly around COVID. on all the calls with government and all the calls with people trying to get help from government and the business being closed, refunding people money, not having the people around. You know, we've got 5 lodges, so we've always got people here. We're always chatting to them. It makes the farm a really interesting and nice place. They were gone, but the whole industry thing just totally ramped up. So my good habits went out the window. And then after that, it's taken me a while to say that's enough. The best thing I'm doing on a daily basis is really getting out in the morning and getting up the hill or even just around the stubble fields just now and walking the dogs for 45 minutes to an hour. And if I don't have that hour doing that, I don't feel good some days.
Yeah, that just clears your head.
Yeah. I was going into the office at 5 o'clock in the morning. Absolutely terrible for you.
Do you feel guilty about taking time out for yourself?
Sometimes. The biggest thing that we have to do is to put yourself first and to say, I'm not going to do that. I can't do that meeting. I can't go out there because I'm going to stop at 5 o'clock tonight. And, you know, say no to people so you've still got time in my diary to, whether it's going swimming or just having a night off or having a nice meal with the family instead of sitting in the office. So I think it's not necessarily guilty. The thing I struggle with is managing people's expectations. And so one of the biggest things is that, you know, people say, oh, that's great. You know, I'll tell them what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to look after myself. Because a lot of people said, oh, you work, you know, they comment on me that I work too long and I look tired and all that. So I'm like, right, I'm going to do something about it. Then I try and do something about it. And then they're annoyed you're not doing their thing. They hadn't actually worked out that that means that I won't be doing their project or meeting them. They just want me to give up all the other stuff. I've had a bit of that. That's really difficult to manage.
Like a lot of farming businesses and family businesses, they tend to be run from your home, you know, where you're living. Ours is the same. And I think one of the biggest challenges we have, and it sounds like you potentially have it as well, is actually there's not really an office door. That office door is always open. It's either your kitchen table or you're through in the office. And it's just stepping away from that.
Our office used to be in the house until 2014. And then we did put an office in the garden. So it's not in the house as such. However, it is in the garden. And although I love my team, if you're then being disciplined and saying, I'm going to take a day off, I don't feel I can relax in the garden, if I'm honest, because although they're lovely people, they're not like staring at me or anything, but like, you know, I can't feel I can sit in a chair and read a book in the garden because they're all working in the office.
You're visible. So, they can see you and there's that guilt element. So yeah.
I find that difficult. And also, you know, we don't have a big cafe or anything like that that you do, but we have 10 people living on site with us in different parts of the farm. It's the delivery people that come after 6 o'clock at night. You know, staff all gone home and there's 4 Amazon deliveries. Somebody's getting a takeaway and they're lost.
Yeah, the buck stops with you. Unless you remove yourself from the site, you don't escape.
Yeah, and that makes it sound, I mean, I absolutely love where we live and I love our business and I love our home. It's not that, it's just sometimes you need to take yourself out of there.
I think that will resonate with a lot of listeners. Mm-hmm. You become sort of captive to your own home and your own business.
I am good at taking breaks and going places, but what I tend to do is work, and then I will go away for 3 days or I will go away for a longer period of time. But if I'm in Scotland somewhere, it still takes me about 3 or 4 days to stop thinking about the business or clearing the last thing. So now when I go on holiday, I'm trying to, if I'm going away for a week, block out 2 weeks, because I know that first week, at least 4 days of it, I'll be doing stuff for 2 hours a day. And that seems ridiculous that I can't organise myself to finish on a Friday at 5 o'clock and just switch off. But I can't switch off It takes me 3 or 4 days to switch off. So I've now put extra time in my diary that I'm off, but I'm not really off, but I'm sort of off. And then I go off.
And what ages and stages are your children?
Oh, so this is interesting because they're both out to leave home. Sophie is 18 and she goes to Harper Adams University next week. And Finlay is 20 and he goes to New Zealand in October.
How fantastic.
Yeah.
For them.
Yeah, for them.
How's mum feeling?
So I'm really excited about both of those things because Sophie loves food and cooking and the farm, and she's going to do food science at Harper Adams, which is what she got her heart set on, and she got her results. And I know she's going to love the course because it's 50% practical and I think she's ready for it. So I know she's going to have a great time. I've got lots of friends, Nuffield friends that live near there. So no doubt I'll not be stalking her, but I'll be down to see her once a term or something. Finlay, when my husband and I were the same age as he is, we had our time in Australia and New Zealand working there. I wanted to emigrate to New Zealand when I was 23. I didn't want to come home. So I'm jealous more than anything.
You got big time FOMO. And I'm just thinking about what you mentioned previously about that sort of building up the business and that sacrifice and the payoffs. And you've got to a stage where you feel you've got the rhythm right. There's it comes and goes and your children are about to go. And I just wonder if you feel they've probably, as a family, there's been an impact on that in terms of growing the business.
Yeah. And I think, it's not just so undoubtedly, I see it now. I'm 51 and I support and work with a lot of amazing people and businesses. And I can see people in their 30s and late 20s starting agritourism businesses or whatever. And they've got, they've just had a baby and they've got two small kids and they haven't got much money on the go. And I can see myself, what I think was 5 minutes ago, being 30 and getting to Tesco's and putting food back at the checkout because you literally are pouring all your money into trying to grow your business. And so on the farming side as well, we were always brought up to work on the farm and to help on the farm. And I think, so I would like to think that our children, which they do, have a really good work ethic because they've seen their mum and dad work hard. But I'm sure there's times where I was working too much and not really spending the time with them. But then
Have you asked them that question? Have you ever?
I'm probably frightened to ask them that question. But I think I remember Finlay at school when he was at primary school or whatever. And everybody's got to say what they did on their summer holidays or what their parents do or whatever. And he said, "Mum works hard so we can go on holiday." So he'd computed the 2 week holiday that he'd had in the sun with mum working long hours, because that's what I guess he used to say. If I work hard now, we will get 2 weeks off. So I work hard, but I know people that work hard that never take a break. So at least, I love a wee holiday, me. So I mean, I think hopefully the kids realise that they've been to New Zealand about 4 or 5 times. They've traveled to the States, they've been around different parts of Europe, and hopefully they know that we like having time out and fun as well as working hard. But you need to work hard to get the money to do the fun.
Of course. I'm sure they've learned a lot from that as well. The Farmstrong Scotland annual survey is now open on our website. This survey shapes everything Farmstrong does, from the resources we create, like our sleep guide, to the podcasts and webinars we produce with our wellbeing partners. By taking part, you're helping us understand what matters most to farmers and crofters right now. Your feedback makes sure Farmstrong continues to deliver support that's relevant, practical, and truly useful for our community. It only takes a few minutes, but it makes a huge difference. Please head to farmstrongscotland.org.uk and fill in the survey. If you didn't catch the link, don't worry, it's also in the written show notes for this episode. I wondered, you talked about the COVID years, and I wondered what the tipping point was for you when you suddenly thought, oh, hold on a second, I've got to stop this rot, and how do I, you know, turn it around?
I mean, I did just not feel good. It wasn't just the work. I think I used to think that the menopause was something that didn't hit you till you were 50. And I think it's great. There's a lot more talk about it now. I think I maybe didn't realise that I was starting to feel the effects of that. And, you know, I went to my doctor about, I don't know, sore neck and crushing pains in my arms and stuff for about 2 years. And they just said, oh, it's, you know, you might be getting arthritis. They never mentioned the menopause. And so I think I wasn't starting to feel physically very well from that. And then all this work and all the financial pressure of certain bits of the business. So if I don't actually sort myself out, then I could just be off ill. I listen to a lot of podcasts and somebody says you've got to, you know, your time between 50 and 55 is the time to get your health sorted out. If it's not, because that's going to reflect on how you are as a person after 65. Do you want to be able to run after your grandchildren or not? Also, my husband Ross, his dad and my dad both died when they're 64. He's about to turn 50. I'm 51. If you look at it like that, if I died the same age as my dad, I'd have like 13 more summers, 13 more Christmases. And so none of us are getting out of here alive. So I feel like I've got to look after myself. And that means changing my habits, really. So I'm not brilliant at this, but I'm trying.
Absolutely. And I think the most frustrating thing about the menopause for me was that you talked about having some physical symptoms, but they're often not obvious. So it sort of creeps up on you. It's something that's hard to go, ah, this is it, it started. This is the line in the sand. I know this is what's happening to me. I understand it. It dislodged me. And I'm still feeling dislodged by it because I can't quite explain it. I can't quite explain what I feel from day to day. It comes and goes. And even when I'm explaining it to my children, and I have all boys, it's like, this is why I feel this way. This is sometimes why I act this way, because I think it's why I'm acting a certain way. But they don't get it because they can't see it.
Yeah, I think when you were pregnant, there was this book called What to Expect When You're Expecting. And I don't know if you ever read that book, but anyway, it's a horrific book because, like it said, you know, week 18, and it listed 30 things that you might have or felt this week. And if you read that at the start of your pregnancy, you're like, oh my goodness, I'm going to have, you know, heartburn and swollen ankles, and I'm going to feel depressed. And, you know, but what they don't tell you is that it's like a menu. You will have two things out of the menu. And I think, like, talking to my friends about the menopause, we all have different things. I've never had a night sweat. I don't feel sweaty. I don't feel hot. But I had this crushing pain in my arms. And I definitely feel more anxious as a person. And I don't like that. And I think this is the biggest thing about becoming this age and having the menopause, of which 50% of the population have to go through this, because you want to be perceived by your family, by your friends, in the workplace as a capable person who is functioning well and
level-headed
and can go and speak at conferences and chair board meetings and all that sort of thing. And then this thing which you've got no control over comes over you. And that's why I think there's such a stigma about it, because I've even got friends that I know are suffering and they will not publicly say, I don't feel good. They say, oh, it's not affecting me at all, because they don't want it to be impacted in their workplace. So what happened to me was I had a new staff member start employment last summer. I went a walk with her. I was telling her about this pain I've had, and it was quite bad that day. And she said, oh, have you read Davina's book? And I said, no, I've not read Davina's book. So this lady, Jill, she brought in the book the next day. And I read Davina's book, and it was like What to Expect When You're Expecting. It had the 18 things you might feel. And in it was crushing pains in your arm. And I was like, My doctor never mentioned this. And so basically I went on HRT after that, and those pains went in 10 days, and I haven't had them for a year.
And it's interesting what you're saying about sharing with other women, is that other women, you know, we rely on our girlfriends massively, but sometimes we don't like to see the chinks, or we don't like to share the chinks. And it's a interesting dynamic, isn't it, when someone doesn't want to show you that they're not coping 100%.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think it's been a real eye-opener for me. But as I say, I don't mean HRT works for everybody, but it's been amazing for me. I feel I've got energy back. I feel, you know, like the doctor's like, oh, you know, you need to lose some weight. You need to lose a stone and a half or whatever. And I was saying, I can't lose weight because I'm so tired from, and then I went on these patches and I've lost that weight because, anyway, I'm like, I'm not a sales rep for HRT patches, but I feel that if I'd known for 2 years that that crushing pain in my neck and my arms, which was making me feel absolutely terrible, was related to menopause, I would have been down, I would have been speaking to the doctor about that and saying, look, if you read Davina's book, never mind me.
Our listeners might be thinking this is sort of we've got a menopause
special.
We're starting a podcast on the menopause, given that we had Dr. Curry on last week. They'll be worried that that's our theme.
Okay. I can talk about other things.
Well, no, of course we can, but it is very important, and I think it's good to share, and it's nice for other women to hear that, okay, I'm not alone, and we don't always get it right. Because I think from the outside looking in, you come across as an extremely capable, and I have to say, an inspiration to lots of women within the rural sector. And I very much look up to you, and I know a lot of other women do, but it's nice to know that you also need to go at 6 o'clock and walk the dogs and have a bit of a scream at the top of the hill.
Absolutely. I scream often at the top of the hill.
Okay, so let's pause the menopause if we can do that. We can't sadly do that ourselves, but the chat about it, and go back to a bit of business and just that the building the business and the sort of challenges you faced with that. And I know you grew up in a family farm. So just a little bit about you growing up, and you talked about that work ethic and that sort of, you know, looking at your parents and seeing what they achieved, and, you know, where did that ambition come from?
I mean, I think I put a lot of, you know, my sister and brother have also done some amazing things in their careers and their businesses. And I think it's from having parents that said, if you're interested in something, just go for it, just try it. We always were encouraged to do whatever we wanted and to just go for it. But we were, you know, we come home from school, we were on the tatty harvester, on the tatty dresser. We did a lot of things with tatties, I have to say. We thinned neeps. There was a lot of community around that as well. You know, it was, make myself sound like I was brought up in the 1940s or something. But if, you know, there was seven of you all with a hoe going up a hill thinning neeps, there was good banter, there was good chatter. And I think I've tried to take that enjoyment at your work, the banter and the good crack, into my own business now. And I would hope that our team, if they came on and spoke to you, would say that we have lots of pressure in the office, we have lots of deadlines and things, but we have a right good laugh as well.
You talked about spending a lot of time in New Zealand and your son's going there, and I've also spent quite a lot of time in New Zealand, and I found it a very invigorating, inspiring place. I think there's a huge affinity with the Scots in New Zealand, and I find New Zealand very pioneering. I love their sort of vibe out there, and I'm just wondering, having been to that side of the world, was that an inspiration for you in terms of your business?
Absolutely. I mean, that's where the inspiration for our business came from, because when we were in our early 20s, when we did have, you know, enough money, we would stay in these lovely kind of couples' cottages on farms. And that's where we got our idea for the Hydro Experience business. But I love New Zealand because, you know, there's a lot of emphasis placed on, you know, 5 o'clock at night on a Friday, all sitting down as a team, having a barbecue. You know, it's just, there's a lot of people playing sport. You could be at the local pub and there's 50 people outside playing touch rugby and then having a pint. And that's the bit I love. The people are not sitting at home so much, I think, watching telly or on digital. I think they're more out there in nature and playing sport with their friends and hanging out. And that's what I love about Kiwis.
Yeah, they've got a great philosophy, don't they?
And it's such a beautiful place and things. So yeah, I'm working on 6 months here and 6 months in New Zealand, but I'm not quite there yet. So.
and obviously being exposed to a lot of businesses and young people coming through the industry, you're saying you know, there's lots of 20 and 30 year olds. And there must be a big shift in how people are approaching the industry and taking on family farms. So that's got to be, that's quite optimistic for young people coming into the industry.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the people that I work with they're all mainly farmers, but they're doing other things, like they are doing farm tours or they're setting up different experiences and things. And I think that there's really good opportunities for people who find the right niche in that market. I mean, the farm should stand up on its own 2 feet in terms of money, but what seeing an opportunity and doing something else, it has those benefits of those extra people on your farm, that community. It certainly, once you get it up and running, just takes a bit of the edge off the financial worry of just having your eggs all in one basket.
It sounds idyllic. It sounds absolutely fantastic. But I suspect there's quite a lot of hard work that goes into it behind the scenes. And I know you mentioned the walk, and how wonderful that you actually had a PT session with your team yesterday. I think that's a brilliant thing to do. And I mean, that must just have such a positive impact.
Yeah, so we've had a PT called Kat, who comes to the garden. She's been with us since a year past in May. 3:15 on a Wednesday, we all down tools. No matter what the weather is, we're in the garden and we do a workout together for an hour. It's absolutely brilliant. The team love it. If you're having a bad day, everybody just gets outside. If there's been a bit of tension, somebody's not done something or I've annoyed somebody, you know, it resets everything. People are saying they feel fitter. I've overheard staff on speaking to other people saying, it's great because I'm in a place that my boss cares about my health. And I think that's really lovely. It's just one thing, but actually that 1 hour a day equates to an extra 6 days of holiday a year for the team.
And how did that come about, Caroline? I'm fascinated to know, was that your idea? Was that a light bulb moment?
It came about because we had a girl called Tassie Millie from Tasmania. We had another one called Kiwi Millie staying with us. Two of them stayed with us for a year. Tassie Millie, she was a fitness fanatic. She ate about 2 pounds of mince a day, 3 steaks. She was a inter-protein and inter-fitness. And she got up every morning and went to the gym. I mean, she was just a ball of energy. Great girl. And I think that was the light bulb from her, that we could all do this as a team. It's a lot of fun. We're now developing kind of fitness wellness breaks for people. And we're going to be doing sort of business boot camps where you do half a day on your business and half a day on fitness. So sort your business out, sort your health out in one day. So we're going to be starting to package and sell those. But yeah, the other thing is that when I was away in New Zealand this year, I met up with quite a few of my Nuffield friends. I was asking them about how do they manage? How do they, you know, not do 70 or 80 hours a week? How do they run a successful business and take time out? So two of them shared with me a written health charter for their business. So we've now got a health charter in our business. That it just states that, you know, we will not disturb you on your day off. You know, unless you've left with the office keys and then you're about to take 2 days off, we will not, you know, contact you. But also, I'm going to put 2 days off a week in my diary. That doesn't always happen, but I'm trying to. But on those days off, please don't contact me unless the emergency services are involved or something big's happening with the, you know, a hot tub's broken down, the heating system at a hideaway is broken down. So we've done a lot of training with team about don't WhatsApp me when I'm halfway up Ben McDewey asking if you should order more ink for the printer because I'll likely burst into tears. I just want to be away from everything. I think there's that thing of I've always made myself available to be always there. And I think that's my fault that I've kind of put myself out there like that. So it's about saying, actually, having 2 days off or 1 day off, not contactable. unless of these five things that are on the wall. That's made a big difference to me. I think also to my team, because they probably hopefully see a slightly less stressed boss that is in better form. Also as well, I've tried to put a day a week in the diary called strategy, you know, blue sky thinking day, where I don't have any meetings. I'm in the office with the team, or I could be away up the hill thinking about the business, but I'm doing something that is working on the business and not in the business. You know, that's been good as well for me, because I just feel the most stressful thing that I feel is this non-stop wave of emails is the biggest stress that I feel. I actually feel sick sometimes just looking at my inboxes, because I've got about four different emails. I feel it's relentless. I feel you just get rid of it. And it's, you know, I used to work, when I worked at the Port of Dundee, when I started off my career, and the mail came in the morning and people would write to us and we'd open the mail and then I'd type a letter and write it back. People didn't just spew loads of communications at you because it took effort to write something, put it in the post. And now it's just relentless. So yeah, that's the biggest thing that stresses me out, the emails. But I have to just get away from them, get some time where I can just sit and do a business plan without looking at my emails.
I'm going to take you right back to the rapid fire questions. And you spoke about what you'd like to do over the next 12 months, which was more personal development to become a mentor. So do you have a mentor?
I've got two or three people that are mentors to me that I've probably never called them my mentor. I haven't signed up to an official mentoring program, but I have two or three people who I go to who do like, we'll do a 1 hour session with me, or I'll meet up with them for a meeting, and they know it's about that I'm going to talk about my development, how I'm feeling, but I don't call them, like I don't say hi mentor, you know. So I think they know, and there's one of them where it's reciprocal. So we sort of do an hour and then I'll do an hour back with them. And that's really powerful.
Well, Caroline, I'm blown away by how much you've achieved, and I suspect all our listeners will be as well. You're a pioneer in the industry in terms of agritourism. I think you are leading the way for lots of businesses and a lot of women in the industry. So it's exhausting listening to you in the nicest possible way. I suspect you never stop, but it's just, thank you very much for being so candid and for sharing, because it's nice to hear that we're all human at the end of the day.
That's important. We're all just trying to do our best. I think one big takeaway for me is I used to, with fitness and things, I used to be either all or nothing. I was either, you know, being really healthy on with food and really on a fitness front, or it was like the other way. And I think what I've tried to do, which has been a bit more successful, is just not set myself such high targets. So sort of, you know, saying, right, if I can do a minimum of half an hour a day walking, and I do a PT session twice a week, and I just try to eat healthily Monday to Friday, and at the weekends I can go a bit mad. I think that's a good thing that seems to be working for me too.
We're all trying to reach for that. We're all trying to get better at it, because we know we have limited time left, as you mentioned. But okay, I'm going to give you a time machine. You've touched on it there, but a time machine, the older Caroline could go back and give some advice to the younger Caroline. What would she say?
I would say, don't worry about things so much. Like quite often, you know, you're worried about what somebody's thinking as they drive off after you've delivered a business plan meeting to them, and oh, was that all right? And they're thinking it was fine way home, and you're worrying. So wish I could switch off that worrying, the worrying element, or the overanalyzing element a wee bit. So,
but that's part of your DNA, and it's probably a reason, one of the main reasons that you have been so successful. So Caroline, you know, don't worry too much. Don't worry too much. Book those flights to New Zealand. Get out there to see your son, and go down to Harper Adams and see your daughter as much as you can. And thank you very much for your time. It's been lovely speaking to you.
Thank you.
Huge thanks to Caroline Miller for taking the time to speak and for being so candid. I really hope this episode of Blether Together from Farmstrong Scotland has entertained and maybe provided some inspiration for supporting your own well-being. Find Farmstrong Scotland online, farmstrongscotland.org.uk, or find us and connect on social media. See you next time.